Welcome to Calder Navigation, the podcast that embarks on a transformative journey through the lives and stories of the incredible people of Calderdale. I'm your host, Samantha McCormick, Artistic Director and Founder of Curious Motion, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this adventure. Calder Navigation invites you to open your hearts and minds to the tapestry of everyday moments and significant events that shape our lives. Through authentic and relaxed conversations, we'll delve into the complexities of what it means to be human, celebrating the diversity and resilience of our community. This podcast is not just a collection of stories. Each episode is a unique exploration, a tribute to the rich tapestry of our shared experiences. So, come and join us on this journey and let's celebrate the remarkable individuals who call the Calder Valley home, and let's uncover the depth and beauty of the human experience together. Welcome to this episode of the Calder Navigation Podcast, where we will embark on a fascinating journey through the life and experiences of Hayley Doherty, a multi-talented professional actor and jazz singer. What sets Hayley apart is not just her remarkable artistic skills, but her unique lifestyle choice that has shaped her into the person she is today. For over a decade, Hayley has called a narrowboat her home, meandering along England's picturesque waterways. Her nomadic spirit and love for exploration eventually led her to settle here in the Calder Valley. So join us as we delve into her captivating story, uncovering the harmony between her artistic passions and the tranquil waters that have been her constant companions for 11 remarkable years. If you fancy having a peek into Hayley's narrowboat, there's a video of this episode available on Curious Motion's YouTube channel too. Hi Hayley.
Hello.
Thank you for having us on your beautiful narrowboat.
No worries.
And for coming on the podcast, really appreciate it. And this is our first videoed one as well, it's very exciting. So I thought, could we just start with a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So I'm from Manchester originally, and I left Manchester, moved down south when I was 18, and then moved around a bit, ended up at drama school in Bristol Old Vic. And then I spent 10 years in London. I bought my boat while I was in London, while I bought it up north and took it down to London. And then I spent 8 years moving around the country on the boat, and I've been working as an actor for nearly 20 years now. Yeah, and I've ended up in Sorby Bridge.
Yeah, great. So what brought you to live on a narrowboat?
So I've been living in London for, I think, 8 years at the time, and I'd kind of got quite sick of sharing houses with random people and moving around, and I was just at that point where I was trying to find another solution, and I got to know some boaters, and I just suddenly thought, oh wow, this could be the solution, you know, to have my own place, because I'd never been able to afford to get a mortgage or whatever in
sure.
London, certainly. So I just thought, I just begged, stole, borrowed and got kind of obsessed about getting a boat and made it happen. Yeah,
that's great, especially with a creative background in like a career. You often are jumping about, aren't you, and in different places.
Yeah, that's it. And it was great actually, because I was able to, some of the jobs with theatre jobs, I've been able to take my boat with me, so I can have my digs. And it's not
lovely.
It's not very convenient in terms of the speed of travel, because it can take
sure.
weeks, so I've needed to have lots of notice, but I have managed to take it to jobs in Nottingham, Bristol, Guildford, all over the place. Yeah.
And do you find that living this lifestyle of living on a narrowboat informs your like creative work, or it's fed into what you do creatively?
I suppose it suits it, because it's so flexible
yeah.
and mobile. On the other hand, it can make things kind of tricky, because it means that I'm not sort of tethered. I don't have any stability, so my home can move around and my job does, and you know, I don't have that. But having said that, I've been here for nearly 3 years. I think 3 years now. So that's the longest I've been anywhere in my adult
right.
life, really.
Yeah. And what brought you to settle here in Sorby Bridge?
So I was moving around, and I'd made it to, I was at Summit near Littleborough, and then we went into the first lockdown, but I was working in Nottingham. I was doing a play at Nottingham Playhouse. So I was over there, and so I basically couldn't leave Nottingham then for a couple of months. Mm. So my boat was up at Summit, and when I got the chance to come and move the boat, I decided to move to be near my mum and my stepdad, who live here. So yeah, I thought I knew we were going to go into another lockdown, so I thought I'd come over here and sort of bubble with them.
Yeah.
So I could do their shopping and help out and stuff. And I just intended it to be a temporary thing, but by the time the lockdown lifted, I had a nice community and friends, and yeah, I've not been anywhere since. So it's
kept
strange.
You here. Yeah. So you feel sort of settled here now? Do you feel like?
I do, yeah.
Just thinking about that, what you were saying about not having any sort of stability because you are moving around. Does it help being somewhere now more long term for you to feel some of the stability that you might like?
Or? Yeah, definitely. I think I got to a point where it sort of suits me to have that. Yeah, and it means you've got a base that you can then go off from. And also there's a lot, when you're moving the boat around, there's a lot of work involved in that, a lot of stuff that's time consuming. And yeah, it makes it difficult to kind of get on with other things and definitely to have any kind of routine, which I still don't really have. But like I run a creative writing group on a Thursday night, and that's happened, you know, every week for the last 2 years. Mm. Even when I've been away on jobs and things, other people have sort of taken over. So it's quite nice to have things that are just regular things for once, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I know you've moved around a lot. Can you remember all the different places you've been? Just wondering where you've been. Obviously, you've mentioned some already, but any unusual places you've been or based yourself for a little while?
Yeah, well, I bought the boat in Audlem in Cheshire.
Right, okay.
So I was working up at the New Vic Theatre, which is Stoke. And so while I was there, I was looking for boats and I found it. And I took it down to London. I moved around London for about 2 years. And then I got a job in Nottingham. So I remember I was literally driving the boat and I got the phone call to say I had this job. So I turned the boat around and started heading to Nottingham.
And that's not like a car, is it? That's not like, oh, I'll just pull over here, turn around and go back.
No, I have to find a spot that's wide enough for you to actually turn around.
Yeah.
So went up to Nottingham, and then my next job was in Bristol at the Tobacco Factory Theatre. And again, they phoned, and as I was leaving the audition, they said, have you got any questions? And I said, well, when will I know? Because if I get it, I kind of have to leave, like, now. Because the job was 5 weeks away, and that's about as long as it takes to get from Nottingham to Bristol on a boat.
Okay.
So thankfully, they phoned me, I think, the same day or the next day and said, yep, on your way. So, Bristol. Then the next job was in Guildford, a Guildford Shakespeare company. Took it down there, down the River Wey. And then when I finished that job, I didn't have anything lined up, and I didn't really fancy going back to London. I felt like I'd done with London. Mm. So I thought I'd head towards Manchester because I hadn't lived. So I'd been down south for 18 years at that point, I think. And so I thought I'm bound to get diverted somewhere along the way. But 6 weeks later, I turned up in Manchester. Mm. So I was there for a little while and then made myself my way across here, down to Nottingham again, and then back up here. So, you know, you get a real mix. You get, you know, you can be in an inner city and it can be quite edgy and quite fun. Like in London, in little Venice or somewhere like that, there's Camden, King's Cross. You can be three boats deep. So you're having to climb over two people's boats to get onto yours.
Oh, wow.
And it's just a sort of non-stop party, really. and then other times you're just completely out in the sticks with no one around for miles. And yeah, it's lovely. And it was nice that I was able to do that in London, because when it got too much, I was able to just go out of town a little bit and get some peace for a few weeks before I went back in and joined in the parties again, yeah.
Yeah. And what's it like, the periods of time when you're travelling and not working?
Yeah.
What's that like? And I know you've said about stability and not having the routine, but I just wonder, does it offer you any sort of a different pace, maybe, than
absolutely.
If you weren't living on a narrowboat, for example, or, you know, were based in somewhere very busy, or
definitely.
So what are the travelling periods like? I suppose because it takes so long, you have to give yourself the time. I imagine.
Yeah, you do, and you just have to adjust to it. So usually, whenever I've gone on a sort of big voyage, I've kind of the first couple of days. This, especially living in somewhere like London, you know, you have that pace and you're thinking, come on, and you're waiting for a lock to fill up or whatever. Or, and you know, you're traveling at 4 miles an hour, that's sort of your top speed on canals,
right.
So it's walking pace, you know, people are overtaking you walking past, so it's yeah, it feels really strange to begin with. And I know people have said this when they go on narrowboat holidays as well. It takes a bit of time, but then usually at some point on sort of the second day, I just suddenly breathe and decompress and just go, you know what, there's no way to speed up this process. This is as long as it takes, and just kind of learn to go with
to
it.
To go with it.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, let your nervous system just chill out.
Yeah.
Harder to do than we might imagine. I definitely know what you mean about that pace and that feeling of, we do live in a world that's sort of churn this out, do this, and kind of telling us to do that as well. Mm. So it's quite a thing to sort of not do that and be in a situation where you really do need to slow down, or literally, I suppose, but also just accept that this is how this is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, it's good for you. And I sort of miss that because I haven't moved the boat for quite a while. So it's be nice to do that soon. Yeah.
Mm. Have there been any surprises or unexpected things that have happened over the years on the narrowboat?
Yeah, there's a lot of surprises. I mean, that first trip I did, so it was 21 days to get from Cheshire down to London, and that's sort of dawn till dusk every day. And it was a real trial by fire because I was new to it. Mm-hmm. You know, the first day I had a friend of my dad's came along who'd had a boat to sort of show me the ropes, and then off they went, and I did have various friends coming to sort of help out along the way, people who lived various parts of the country. I was the captain and I was the only one who sort of knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there was one couple who came who actually knew what they were doing. That was amazing. And I actually had a bath while the boat was moving.
Oh.
And having just been stuck to the tiller for days and days on my own, you know, suddenly I was while someone else drove the boat, which is amazing.
Sounds lovely.
But most days, it was people who I was having to tell them what to do, and I still was really unsure.
Learning, yeah.
And that was intense. And every day something went wrong, you know, something broke, something, I'd run out of fuel, or I'd get grounded and wouldn't be able to move. And it was really intense, but I learned a lot. And by the time I got to London, I was like an old man at the sea, just like dead confident. It was fine.
Been there, done that, got it. Yeah.
I think that's the way to do it. Because some people get boats and they hardly move for a long time, you know, and they do tiny little trips. And actually, that's probably the way to do it. You just go and crash into things till you figure it out.
Well, there were lots of crashing into things. That must
only
be
into
so
walls. I wasn't crashing into other boats.
No, no.
Although, again, things like when it's windy, it's amazing how much it affects your control of the boat. And even if, even a really experienced boater, there's not much you can do. Mm. It's like they catch the wind and they're going to go where they go. So it's,
feels like a real lesson in letting go of control a little bit. You know,
the whole
thing of this is how long it takes to do it. And also like that, in that situation, you know, you can't control the weather and you can do your best.
No.
But
yeah, sometimes you just have to realize that you're not going to be able to drive today. That's, you know, it's as simple as that.
Right.
You might have this somewhere you've got to get to and a deadline, but someday if it's windy, I've driven in some awful sort of rain and just stood there getting absolutely drenched, but which is not, you know, it's not dangerous, at least it's okay. Although, you know, operating locks and climbing around on the boat and up and down ladders and things, it can be a bit treacherous, but yeah, if it's really windy, then it's not worth it, really.
No.
So sometimes you just have to
accept it again.
Accept it, yeah.
I'm going to think of narrowboats now when I need to let go of control. We've talked about how you've come to settle here in Sowerby Bridge. Could you tell us a little bit? Is this, you've always been on this boat, or have you had other boats?
Yes, so I've had this for 11 years.
Yeah.
I did rent a boat, actually, for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a sort of Dutch barge, but that was in a marina, it wasn't moving or anything.
Right.
And so I got a sort of taste for it. But then I've had this one since, for 11 years.
Did you name it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was lucky that it had a nice name.
Yeah.
I've seen boats with some awful names. Apparently it's bad luck to rename your boat unless it's out of the water.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes
I didn't know
people
this.
Will have to sort of stick with the original name until they get it out of the water. It can change.
Yeah, nice that you've got a lovely name already.
Yeah.
I bet there's some crazy names out there.
Yeah,
boats.
I've seen a couple of boats called Brian.
Oh.
Which struck me as the
fair enough
weirdest choice. My brother and my dad are both called Brian, so it's particularly like strange for me. But also, I always think of boats as like female, like they always, you know,
yeah,
cars
quite often
and,
they
and
would
boats
have
are
that.
Usually
yeah.
have like a female name. So,
a couple of Brians. And so, what are you up to now? What's happening with the boat at the moment?
So the boat, I had a flood recently. Yeah, half the boat is like a building site at the moment, as you've seen. So, yeah, I've got a lot of work to do on that. And I've not been doing a brilliant job at getting on with it this summer, really. So I need to crack on with that. But I'm busy, sort of, I'm rehearsing a play at the moment. And I'm in a band as well. So there's, you know, things get in the way, basically. But
yeah.
This end of the boat's okay. So.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, that must be really hard to deal with. I mean, there's, you've talked about, you know, the letting go of control, accepting certain things, but things like a flood and big events like that, that's hard, I think, for anybody to deal with in their space as well.
Yeah, absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And having to then cope with that on top of usual life. I can't imagine it's easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as I say, this summer's been difficult. It's it's quite a blow, especially because I had a flood a few years ago, and I'd basically just pretty much finished renovating the boat. So I'd put a lot of work in, and it was looking really good, and it was almost done, and then this has happened. So it's been a bit of a blow. So I've been struggling a bit this summer, but I need to get it sorted now before the really cold weather sets in.
Yeah, And have you got support around you?
Yeah, I've got family. As I say, my parents are here. Yeah. Well, my mum and my stepdad, they bought a boat a few years after me. So, and ended up mooring here. Mm. So that's how I've ended up here. So they're just next door. So thankfully
that's
I can
nice.
Use their facilities while mine aren't working. Yeah, and I've all the rest of my family are within maybe a 45-minute drive or something, so that's good.
Oh, yeah, that's really nice.
And I've got a lovely community here in Sorby Bridge, as I say. I've been here 3 years, and I quite quickly managed to make some good friends and, like, get involved with what's going on here, yeah.
And do you notice, and just a big theme that comes up for us on this podcast and in general when we talk to people about Calderdale, is its natural landscape. And I just wondered if there's anything in particular you've noticed in the local area, in the canals here. Is there anything that makes it kind of identifiable for Calderdale?
Well, it's, I guess, yeah, the valley, but it's, so obviously here we've got the high sides of the valley around us, which means everywhere you look, there's just natural beauty, which is amazing. But then also working your way along the Rochdale Canal towards Manchester, and obviously getting to Summit and then and past Todmorden and that way, it's absolutely stunning. And you then get on to the tops, really, and those amazing views around you. It's absolutely gorgeous. And that's a big reason why I've stayed here as well.
Yeah, it seems to be a big draw for people.
Yeah.
I know personally for me it is. I moved here having lived in cities, and I knew nearby areas but not Calderdale, and then so struck by its landscape and the access to nature. It just feels really special, I think.
Yeah.
So we're going to finish off with the frequently asked questions that people such as myself would probably ask you. And you very kindly sent over the top ones that you always get asked and that you end up having to talk about a lot. So I appreciate you answering them again that we can record them. But I thought this was a really nice idea, because I think if you haven't lived on a narrowboat or had a connection to, you're going to have questions. People
course,
are really
yeah.
curious, aren't they,
yeah,
about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting thing to shine a light on. And I know you're also keen to show the reality of living on a narrowboat.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's no version of life that's perfect, is there? And we might all read about how idyllic and cheap it is and all of these maybe rhetorics we get given generally. And some of them will be true, and some of them actually maybe not.
yeah, I think that is something boaters get annoyed about, really, because, you see all these articles, people talking about their amazing idyllic life on a boat, and, you know, there's another side to it, of course. And I think there's probably a lot of people who end up moving onto boats and are pretty disappointed and disillusioned when they see the reality of it, because it's not all.
Yeah, there's a lot of hard work and easy. a change of lifestyle that is good and bad, and everything in between.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so let's go for these questions.
Okay.
So the first one, very important, is how does the toilet work?
Both just spend a lot of time talking about toilets. Okay, so there are different types. There's cassette toilets, which are like people might be familiar with in caravans, where you have a sort of box underneath that you take out and you have to then walk and empty it at the L sand point. And they're dotted around the canal system, so people can stop and use them. But I've never had one of those, but apparently they can fill up in just a few days, so it can be a bit of a pain that you're constantly having to deal with it. And more to the point, you're having to deal with it. And I've heard horror stories about splashback and things when people empty them. So as soon as I heard that, I decided that I would definitely get what we call a pump-out toilet. Mm-hmm. So basically that is you have a big tank inside your boat, and when it's full, you take it to a boatyard. You take the boat to the boatyard, not the tank. And they basically put a pipe in the side of the boat and they press a button and it sucks it all out.
Oh, great.
So it's preferable. But most people who have cassette toilets say they'd only ever have a cassette, and most people who have pump out say they'd only ever have one of those. So, you know.
Very loyal to the toilet system.
Absolutely. Very. Yeah, there's a lot of arguments about that, but I like my pump out system. I don't have to get too close to it.
Yeah. I think I'd imagine I'd be the same as you on that, I think.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, next question. Where does your post go?
Basically, your boat has to be registered at an address somewhere.
Yeah, so, okay.
You know, the Canal River Trust can write to you and things like that. So I use, like, my sister's address. So people use a family address. So you can have post go somewhere like that. If you're on a mooring, if you're on a long-term mooring, and you have to pay to be on a long-term mooring, because otherwise you have to keep moving. You move every 2 weeks, basically,
right.
If you're what they call a continuous cruiser. But,
nice,
but if you're
nice.
Not a continuous cruiser, and continuous cruisers call us continuous floaters, the ones who don't move around. Anyway, if you're a continuous floater, then you, if you're living in a marina or something like that, then you may have like a pigeonhole a post box at the marina. But yeah, when I was moving around for over 8 years, and it wasn't too much of a problem, because I think most of the post people get now are bills,
mm-hmm.
and we don't get the same kind of bills, because we turn up and we buy a bottle of gas, or we get our diesel tank filled and we pay for it there. So we don't get that. It would only be, you know, if I was ordering something online and wanting something delivered, mm-hmm. that it might be an issue.
Right.
In which case, I just use somewhere I was working or a friend who lives nearby or something.
Yeah.
I suppose it's those delivery box type things now, aren't
yeah.
they, that you can get things
yeah.
sent to. So,
yeah,
that's the post.
Great, thank you. Okay, next question. Are there parking inspectors to check if you've moved?
Yes. People are always surprised by this.
Yeah.
They think, surely you don't have to move every 2 weeks. But
idea about that.
Yeah, so there are like mooring inspectors who, again, Canal River Trust sort of organise that. And they will make a note of where all the boats are on the system. And then if they're still there a couple of weeks later, then they'll hassle you.
Mm.
Yeah. Ultimately, they can sort of refuse to give you a licence the following year. You know, you won't be allowed to have your boat in the canal system. So
yeah, so you do need a licence to be on the canal as well.
It's not like a driving licence.
Yeah, okay.
You don't. There's no test or anything.
Right.
But it's almost like the equivalent of council tax.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying towards the upkeep of the canals
mm-hmm.
and for your access to water and bins and things like that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Okay, next one is, do you have a shower and cooking facilities?
Yeah, I don't know what people people imagine we live on
like,
boats.
Do you go and bathe in the canal? Hopefully not.
No. So, yeah, as you can see, I've got like a full-size sort of cooker and everything.
Yeah.
Usually I have a bath with a shower over it, so mm-hmm. it's quite civilised.
Second to last question is it really cheap to live on a boat?
It's not really cheap to live on a boat, but the place you save the money really is the cost of the property. So a boat will probably be a lot cheaper than your house or flat, although you can spend an absolute fortune on a boat if you had a new one built or whatever. But yeah, that's really where you save the money, because there are quite a lot of costs. Still have bills. We still have like gas and diesel or coal, whatever people are heating their boats with. And yeah, you have to pay the license, but there's also a lot of maintenance. So there's always things sort of going wrong that needs it. It's kind of like living in a big vintage car. So, you know, everything's constantly vibrating when the engine runs, and everything kind of works its way apart. And it's, yeah, there's a lot of maintenance. You also have to have it taken out of the water every couple of years to black the bottom, as we call it. So we put kind of grind all the stuff off the hull and then put bitumen on the bottom of it or something similar. So, yeah, there's a lot of maintenance. So it's not as cheap as you might imagine.
Yeah, it's that idyllic thing again of, oh, it doesn't cost anything and it's really peaceful. And
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's any version of anything that's always like that, is it?
Well, nothing's particularly cheap at the moment anyway,
no,
is it?
No, I know. Mm. Yeah, definitely. And then we've got one more question, which you said this is the number one question that nearly everybody asks you.
Yeah.
Which is it not cold in the winter?
Okay. So I think if next time you're walking past narrowboats in the winter, just have a peek inside, and people are probably walking around in their underwear because most people have the multi-fuel stoves and it's, you know, wood and coal, which might not make a huge impact in a house, but in a small space like a boat, it's absolutely roasting in the winter, and it's difficult to actually control them and keep the temperature down, if anything. I have central heating and a diesel stove. And I have electric heat as well because I'm plugged into kind of mains electricity here. Mm. So, there's no reason for me ever to be cold. Obviously, the only issue would be if you couldn't afford to, you know, be stocking it with coal all day long. And prices have risen with coal and diesel and things now. So, but yes, in terms of the sort of equipment people have on board, there's, it's too hot, if anything.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think everybody's always really concerned about warmth, toilets, showers, food.
Yes.
Like basic, our main needs, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, well, I'm all about creature comforts. I know a lot of people, a lot of boats, they kind of have little built-in sort of benches and dinettes and things like that, but I just didn't want any of that. For me, it's like big, comfy sofa, nice bed, bath. Lovely. Priorities, yeah.
Yeah, no, it feels really cosy. So just to finish off, can you tell us what you're up to in your professional life at the moment?
Yeah, OK, so I'm rehearsing a show at the moment, which we're going to be doing at the Mercer Gallery in Harrogate at the end of this month. And it's called Another Way of Telling. It's about the theory of photography, actually. Mm. So it's quite an unusual piece. It's almost like a sort of a cross between a play and a lecture and a slideshow. Mm. And so anyone who's interested in photography and philosophy might be interested in that. And I'm in a band called Hayley's Little Big Band, and we're playing, we've got a lot of gigs booked in Cumbria this winter, but the next thing we've got is at the Vault in Hebden Bridge. We're playing on the 30th in the afternoon, 30th of September in the afternoon. So yeah, that's what I'm working on at the moment. So lots of lines to learn and rehearsals to do. But it's great.
You must be so busy with your work as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, obviously, with the kind of work I do, sometimes it's dead quiet and have time for other things. But at the moment, it's pretty manic, yeah.
Nice. Well, we'll put some links in your show notes and things about your band. And would like to have a look at some of the work you're in and what's coming up, you can put that on there as well.
Brilliant. That'd be great. All right, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for chatting to me and inviting me into your beautiful home. I just feel very privileged to have spent the time in here. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
And for sharing with us what it's like and what your experience of that has been like. Yeah, and hopefully all the best with your upcoming work
as well.
And the renovation of the getting everything sorted again.
I'll get there eventually.
Yeah, you'll get there. But yeah, thank you so much, Hayley.
Thank you.
And so we arrive at the closing chapter of this season of Calder Navigation. We want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who has joined us on this voyage through the stories that shape Calderdale, and to our wonderful guests for sharing their stories. Throughout this season, we've had the privilege of sharing inspiring conversations that touch the heart, ignite the mind, and reaffirm the profound power of human connection. As we wrap up this season, let's carry these remarkable stories with us, cherishing the invaluable lessons they impart and the bonds they strengthen. Calder Navigation is an integral part of the Welland Activator Project, a collective initiative dedicated to combating loneliness and isolation within our community. We encourage you to explore the diverse range of classes, workshops and walks offered through the programme. Discover more about this at curiousmotion.org.uk. This production is supported using public funding by the National Lottery through Arts Council England, alongside support from Calderdale Council and Reaching Communities from the National Lottery Community Fund. Our deepest gratitude to them for their support. Big thanks also to Untold Creative for their production support. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Calder Navigation on your preferred podcast platform, ensuring you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, we would really appreciate you spreading the word by sharing this podcast with your friends, family, and anyone who might find solace, inspiration, or a sense of belonging within these stories. As we draw the curtain on this season, we invite you to continue your journey of exploration, connection, and navigating life's currents with curiosity and compassion. Remember, the adventure doesn't end here, it simply takes a brief pause. Until next time, may you always sail with fair winds and warm hearts.